Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, a first in trying to stop the spread of nuclear capability to terrorists. Protecting yourself from the Zika virus. We go for a new virtual reality roller coaster ride.
It was exciting. I'm telling you, you could see the buildings. You were firing at these, you were firing missiles.
And we hear about Ariana Grande and her new song, Dangerous Woman. It's right here on The Voice of America. The White House Nuclear Security Summit gets underway this week. Delegations from more than 50 nations and organizations will consider evolving nuclear threats and ways to minimize and prevent them. Also, for the first time, there will be a special session on how to ensure that terrorist groups like Islamic State do not get their hands on nuclear materials. One concern is that Russia, through lack of full cooperation with international nuclear control agreements, might allow nuclear materials to get into the hands of terrorists. Examining this topic and joining me here in the studio is correspondent Catherine Gibson. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, what can you tell us about this possible weak link?
Right. So it's definitely a topic of concern for a lot of the analysts that I've been speaking to here in Washington in the lead up to the summit. They're saying that if we don't have Russia participating in the summit, then we're missing a huge chunk of the arms control efforts that need to happen in the world today. You've got, between the United States and Russia, more than half of the world's plutonium, 90% of the highly enriched uranium. So you need their presence at the table to work out these agreements and figure out what needs to be done in terms of arms control efforts.
Do we know why they're not coming to the party?
Well, we already know that they don't participate in a wide range of treaties, looking at arms control and looking at nuclear cleanup. So it's really not a surprise that they're not coming to the table. It's been a long-running issue in terms of participation.
They participated in other events, though.
That's right. They've been at other summits, but they don't participate in some of the major international treaties and agreements that look at these issues.
Mm. Well, where could these nuclear threats come from?
Well, we do know that there are some issues in terms of securing nuclear facilities. We need to look at plutonium. We need to look at highly enriched uranium stockpiles, which, since we don't have much information about what's happening inside Russia in terms of cleanup efforts, we don't know how highly secured their facilities are, how some of this material could be leaking out. There have been reports about the black market in Eastern Europe and the materials coming out, being sold to terrorists. Those are some huge concerns.
Talking about the terrorists getting this nuclear material, what might they get?
They could get uranium or plutonium. They could build a dirty bomb. They could also work to get to the scientists. If the scientists are available, you could use their knowledge, or they could possibly be bribed. And, you know, that's not something that we need to be happening, particularly in the wake of the Paris and the Brussels attacks.
One of the issues we've had, though, with North Korea, a nuclear issue, is delivery. They have to have a way to get it somewhere. They have to have the missile technology. They have to have jets or planes or some way to get it from where they are, other than just walking into a crowd. That's a lot of money. The terrorists would have to have a lot of money and a lot of expertise in order to get a delivery system.
They would. So what the main issue is, a concern about a dirty bomb, because you really don't need as much material, and you just need radioactive material that you then wrap around an explosive device. And then all bets are off. You could destroy, you know, part of a city if you have that ability.
Well, are you optimistic about this conference that's going to be happening in Washington?
They are going to be holding a special summit addressing the terrorist issue and looking at it from all angles and all of the countries that are attending. So hopefully we'll get some really encouraging deliverables to come out of that.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And Catherine's going to stay with us right here at the Anchor Studio, because we're joined now by social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. Welcome, Andrew. I hope you don't mind that Catherine's going to join us in our little chat here today.
No, I'm happy to have more than her here.
I understand you know each other. So what's being said about this on the web today?
Well, there are certainly a lot of concerns about what's going on at the summit and what will be going on. There's also a lot of information about the security. We're seeing a lot of people within Washington, D.C. talking about the shutdowns within the city for this summit. One person describing snipers that they saw on top of a roof of a building and cordoned off walkways, kind of caged off. So it really speaks to the importance of this summit, seeing the security going up and how tightly it's being controlled.
Even here at VOA, we've been warned about the traffic to get in to work tomorrow.
Right.
And covering this story, it's going to be difficult for you too.
The subway is going to be interesting.
Absolutely. And that, like I said, speaks to, as Catherine was saying, the importance of this summit. It's kind of an outward symbol of this importance that we're seeing and being shared across social media. I don't know how keen the Secret Service and other police organizations are that these things are being shared and pictures of these different checkpoints are being taken, but they are being put out there for sure.
You got something else for me today, Andrew?
Yes, we have Snapchat, of course, the picture messaging app is expanding its chat functionality.
Have you seen this, Catherine?
Oh, absolutely. It's big on the campaign trail, which I've covered a little bit.
Yes, and VOA is using it. Catherine, I've seen, you know, using Snapchat and Facebook
That's
Live
right.
and all those things. It's now, you know, reporting 2.0, but Snapchat is expanding on its messaging function to try to compete with Facebook Messenger. Snapchat has about 100 million daily users. Facebook Messenger has about 800 million, so they've got a ways to go, but they're trying certainly to tap into some of the excitement that Facebook's generated with its messaging app. And on that note, Facebook has just announced that they've, for the first time, have partnered with an airline, KLM, the Dutch airline. You're going to be able to, and this, I'm intrigued by this. I can't wait to see how this works. You're going to be able to talk to customer service representatives, change your reservations, look at your boarding pass, all through Facebook Messenger.
Wow.
I'm really potentially concerned about that, but intrigued to see how it works out. If it goes off without a hitch and if people start using it.
Well, Andrew, as we found sometimes in the past, technology can be a good thing or it can make things even more complicated.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you both for visiting.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
The World Health Organization describes malaria as a life-threatening disease caused by parasites that are spread to people when they are bitten by infected female mosquitoes. Some think that the disease originated as recently as 15,000 years ago. Now, researchers at Oregon State University have traced the origins of malaria and find that it has evolved for at least 100 million years. They say the first vertebrates to be infected were most likely reptiles, and at that time, this group of animals included dinosaurs. But instead of mosquitoes spreading the malaria parasite to its victims, these prehistoric forms of the disease were carried by other insects, such as a family of small flies called the biting midge. The researchers say that understanding malaria's evolution could help scientists develop new methods to stop its transmission. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The World Health Organization says 47 nations are reporting transmission of the Zika virus, and the WHO says there is increasing evidence the disease is linked to two neurological disorders, microcephaly, which causes brain abnormalities in babies, and Guillain-Barré syndrome, which may result in paralysis. Correspondent Carol Pearson is tracking whether the virus will take root in the United States and joins us here in the studio. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Susan.
Well, where does the danger stand?
Well, the coastal United States is now getting ready for perhaps some Zika transmissions. I mean, the coastal United States, the southern area along the Gulf Coast, the Gulf of Mexico and coastal Florida, they have these warm tropical kinds of climates, ideal breeding situations for the Aedes aegypti mosquito, which can carry the Zika virus. Plus, that kind of mosquito already lives in this area. Doesn't mean that the mosquito necessarily carries the virus, but it can carry it if it's infected, if it bites an infected person.
Well, what can be done about the threat?
Right now, even the director of the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Diseases says, don't get bitten. And
well, that's easier said than done.
Right, especially in the summertime, because in this area, the population of mosquitoes goes way up starting in May, and it doesn't begin to subside until maybe September. So they have to make an awareness campaign for people, because a lot of people don't know much about this virus or the mosquito. You have to wear mosquito repellent. You have to wear long sleeves. And the problem is, they have a lot of poor people in this area, and they are just as poor as some of the people in Latin America. They don't have access to maybe air conditioning. It's not expected to be a big problem in the United States because of air conditioning, but a lot of these people don't have it. They might not be able to afford mosquito repellent. It's a major problem, and hospitals are already getting calls about the Zika virus and what do I do.
And also there's the issue of cleaning up.
Yeah, you have to get rid of all the debris. And in poor areas, that's really hard. People live very close to each other. These mosquitoes can breed in 1 milliliter of water, you know, enough water that lines the rim of a flower pot. You have to get rid of all that stuff. You have to get rid of old tires. Anything that can hold a little bit of water, you have to get rid of it.
What about funding for doing all this?
The Obama administration asked Congress to appropriate $1.9 billion. That's really the first down payment on this Zika control. But Congress has not yet done it. And time is getting really short. The Centers for Disease Control, they say that they're counting every dime. They don't have excess money, they say. The National Institutes of Health also says they don't have excess money. And during the recession in 2008 and 2009, the state's public health programs were slashed, and they have not yet recovered. So they're counting on some kind of money from Congress.
You know, there doesn't seem to be as much concern for the Zika virus as there was for, say, Ebola. And do you think they're handling this virus better than the Ebola crisis was handled?
Well, the World Health Organization stepped in very fast, and so did the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But in some ways, this virus is even scarier than Ebola. It doesn't have, you know, that horror associated with it that Ebola has of blood coming out of orifices. And by the way, not everybody had that. However, what it does do, especially for infants, is it can cause a whole panoply of birth defects that last a lifetime. So that is the horror of Zika.
What about how the officials are handling it? Do you think it's been pretty good compared to the way they handled Ebola?
There is still a certain amount of fear, but I think that what's needed most is information. And in terms of how to handle it, you need money. You need money for educational campaigns. You need money to try to help people, especially poor people, avoid getting bitten. And it's a real threat for pregnant women or women who become pregnant, because it can affect you, research shows, anywhere along the pregnancy. And in later stages, it causes the placenta to shrink and can cause stillbirths. And they still don't know what percentage of these children will be born with any kind of birth defects.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Carol, for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Coming up on International Edition, hold on tight for the virtual reality roller coaster ride. And a dangerous woman takes to song. The next generation of the roller coaster experience has arrived. Correspondent Elizabeth Lee checked a new virtual reality roller coaster at a Los Angeles, California amusement park called Six Flags Magic Mountain and spoke to the ride's developer, Thomas Wagner. Here's what she found out.
On this clear morning, Jesse Cotton and his mother are ready to experience the unknown.
It was exciting. I'm telling you, you could see the buildings. You were firing at these, you were firing missiles. It's exciting.
Because you're wearing goggles, you can't see the track. You don't know what's about to come.
Cotton is about to ride the roller coaster again. He's one of the first people to experience a virtual reality roller coaster. It's a traditional ride that is transformed when riders put on Samsung's Gear VR headset. It's a Samsung phone paired with virtual reality goggles. There is a box on the roller coaster that maps the ride. It knows exactly the position of the ride and sends a Bluetooth signal to the rider's headset, resulting in what the person sees.
For every coaster, we have to figure out where do we place our black box that is transmitting the Bluetooth signal. Do we have a good reception in all of the seats?
The maker of this experience says not every type of roller coaster is a candidate for the virtual reality experience.
We had bad experience going on wooden coasters, for instance, for the vibration. So the headset would be vibrating, the electronics would be vibrating heavily, and that's not that good. But all the steel coasters of the world would be able to be equipped.
This roller coaster, called the New Revolution, is made of steel and takes riders on a journey to fight aliens from the sky in this virtual city.
You look down and everything's moving with you. Really felt like you're the pilot of this fighter jet. And you're definitely going to jump out of your seat a few times.
So my plane is about to take off. And above me, I see the sky and an entire city with skyscrapers around me and planes flying around me. Woo! You can look all around you. You're completely surrounded by this world. Wow, that was quite an experience. Nothing like I've ever experienced before.
Nine Six Flags Parks in North America will be debuting virtual reality roller coasters this year, creating a completely new experience for thrill seekers. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
A thunderstorm overtakes an airport, a terrifying experience for someone who's afraid to fly. But this situation's not real. It's just playing out on a smartphone inside of a virtual reality headset for a patient with phobias.
For me, everything was stressful. Before, flying was stressful. It was stressful to go to the airport. The takeoff was stressful.
But that was before Gerardo Gary started treatment in Argentina with psychiatrists from the Poder Volar organization in Buenos Aires. And Gerardo says he's now cured of his fear of flying. Psychiatrist Claudio Pla.
Virtual reality is wonderful for therapists because it allows us to recreate the feared scenario in an office.
The psychiatrist can control the intensity of the feared virtual experience, but they say the treatment must be used in combination with real experience for phobia patients to improve. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
It's time for our music chat with Larry London, and he joins me here in the studio, and he's going to talk to us about a song that he says is all about me. The song is called Dangerous Woman.
Yes.
And that is me.
Dangerous Woman. Only this time around, though, it's Ariana Grande who's the Dangerous Woman. She is releasing her third album, which is titled Dangerous Woman. Interesting story, the album was supposed to come out last year, and originally it was called Moonlight. But she decided she didn't like the songs. She redid the album. She stopped a tour that she was about to start. You hear that often these days where people start a tour and stop a tour because they're not satisfied with the product. And so such is the case for Ariana Grande, who began her career on Nickelodeon on a TV show called Victorious and became quite famous a number of years ago for her acting. And then she released an album, and now she's got a new album coming out, and her fans are very excited.
Well, are you going to rate this one? Sometimes you say this is going to be a number one hit. Sometimes, what do you think?
I'm not going to go that far this time around. I mean, Ariana Grande is okay in my book. This is only my personal opinion now. She has a following. She has fans. She's had a number of big hits. But I don't think she possesses the star power and the sound that's necessary to sustain a number one song. I hope she proves me wrong. But I know she was in the news last year for less than stellar decision. She was in a donut shop and she licked a donut.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
It was a gross out.
Exactly. It was a gross out. So she caught some slack from her fans for that. She has said some other comments that were disparaging. She said, "I don't like America." She later retracted that and apologized. She said a number of different things that have kind of set her back a little bit. She's been known to have diva-esque behavior, and people just say that she's really not worthy of it at this point. With only two albums out and a third coming out, she hasn't earned the diva label yet.
No, she's not quite up there with Cher and
exactly.
Madonna.
Exactly, Mariah Carey, Madonna, all those others who have put in the time and paid their dues. Ariana Grande also put out two perfume lines in the last 8 months, the latest of which is named for her brother, Frankie. So she's venturing off into different directions, and so her new music is coming off the new album. We're looking forward to hearing the whole album when it comes out.
Well, is it worth it for us to download Dangerous Woman?
Yeah, sure. If you don't mind Ariana Grande and you like her sound, then yeah. I mean, she was a guest recently on Saturday Night Live. She was the host, the musical host and guest, and so she did an imitation of a bunch of different people.
Oh, I saw that. She was great.
Yes,
she was really amazing.
She did Britney Spears. She did Celine Dion. She did Rihanna.
She was right on top of them.
Exactly. She did a great job with each, and apparently she said that Celine Dion was thrilled with her impression. And so, yeah, Ariana Grande has many talents. But I think it's still very early in her career.
Well, maybe she should take on some of these other singing qualities she has and
that's
pursue
right. Do
her
a
career.
Whole album with nothing but other singers'
yes.
voices.
That'd be great. Hey, Larry, before you go, I wanted to ask you, could you please tell my listeners how to get into your show so they can hear it?
Well, you can do it several different ways. VOAnews.com, go to programs, and then TV, and then Border Crossings, because we're on TV on the Internet. And you can also go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/VOA Larry London.
Do you look as cute on TV as you do here, Larry?
No, I wish I did, but I don't. Oh. I look a lot taller on the radio.
Oh. Thanks a lot, Larry. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Susan.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcasts, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For the first time, the United States is working with the naval forces of Gulf of Guinea nations in a joint exercise to improve the region's preparedness and capability to combat piracy, narcotics trafficking, and other maritime threats. The combined exercise, Obangame Saharan Express 2016, was officially launched on March 17, 2016, at Senegalese National Marine Naval Base by authorities of the participating and observing countries. Cameroon is the official host of the exercise, with elements of the exercise taking place in other participating countries. The northernmost hub of the exercise, Senegal, was chosen to host the opening ceremony. The ceremony was presided over by U.S. Embassy Chargé d'Affaires Sandra Clark, Chief of Staff of the Senegalese Navy Rear Admiral Chekbar Osisoko, and the Commander U.S. 6th Fleet Vice Admiral James Fogo. Exercise Obangame Saharan Express is a multinational maritime exercise sponsored by U.S. Africa Command and facilitated by U.S. Naval Forces Europe Africa U.S. 6th Fleet that brings together African, European, South American, and U.S. forces, part of a global network of navies, to enhance cooperation and expertise in maritime security operations. The exercise will take place throughout the Gulf of Guinea and will have land-based maritime operations centers throughout the region. In the past, Obangame Express and Saharan Express were separate exercises that took place in different areas of West Africa. This year, they have been combined to increase capacity building for more partners across West Africa. There are 27 participating nations in Obangame Saharan Express 2016. Angola, Benin, Belgium, Brazil, Cameroon, Cabo Verde, Cote d'Ivoire, Democratic Republic of Congo, Denmark, Equatorial Guinea, France, Gabon, Germany, Ghana, Morocco, the Netherlands, Nigeria, Portugal, Republic of Congo, Sao Tome and Principe, Senegal, South Africa, Spain, Togo, Turkey, United States, and the United Kingdom, as well as the Economic Community of West African States and the Economic Community of Central African States. This Oban Game Saharan Express 2016 exercise ended with a symposium in Douala, Cameroon. The United States is proud to work with its international partners to keep the seaways to Africa open and safe for the benefit of all the peoples of Africa.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.